The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Welcome to Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for joining us. You can tell my voice is a little bit back. It's not 100%. Thank you to Dr. Schmaltz for checking in on me today. I appreciate that very much. Bill, you're so kind. We appreciate you. You know what? I had a good day. Doug Hughes is going to be with me here. I had a chance to go up to Chicago, and we had some meetings on Wednesday afternoon. Then that evening, Ryan Belcher and I from my office, we went to the Cubs game, which was great. It was a little bit colder than I anticipated. But it was a ceremony to award the rings for the World Series. That was so cool. And then we watched the game, and unfortunately they got beat by 2 runs by the Dodgers. But it was a fantastic evening, a great time, and then made great time coming back on Thursday to do the show. So Doug Hughes joins me now. And Doug, you've been up to the Cubbies games with us before. Pretty cool stuff.
Well, I've been a few times, and there is really nothing quite like going out to the ballpark. You know, take me out to the ballpark. It really is a great feeling, and I encourage everyone to just take the family and go up there and do that sometime.
You know, you can do it right here, Indiana University baseball. You can do the Indians up in Indianapolis. Yeah. You can go to Cincinnati for the Reds, which, by the way, is an easy ticket right now. The Cubs, not so much. I was there on a Wednesday night, and I thought, man, don't these folks work? Because right, there are people right everywhere. But it was really cool. Got a good show today. We're going to start off the show with mailbag questions that actually came from Ed Slott and Company. Questions on early distributions from IRAs to pay for medical expenses and also doing a backdoor Roth IRA. And then later in the program, I was quoted in a Forbes article recently, and I wanted to just tell you about that and tell you where you could get it, but more importantly, just kind of give you a behind-the-curtains view of how these things work, how people actually get quoted in these national publications like the Wall Street Journal, Kiplinger Magazine, Forbes. And then later in the program as well, we're going to talk about understanding long-term care costs, the importance of long-term care planning, what are your options, some of the things that Medicare will pay for, things that it won't, just to make you aware of that. Doug recently had a lunch with a senior VP of a well-known company, and they talked about a calculator that can be used to help you understand what it will cost for different things in retirement as far as health care costs. Fidelity is saying that it costs a married couple age 65, what, about $250,000 out of pocket,
yep,
of non-reimbursed things, and that does not include long-term care expenses. And then lastly, we'll talk about retirees who are always on the search for income. We're going to talk about the different sources out there and what maybe you haven't really thought about as far as income sources in retirement. So we're going to have a lot to talk about. This was a really short segment, but when we come back, we'll do a little news of the week to kick things off, and then we'll get right into the mailbag questions from Ed Slott and Company. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
Live from downtown Bloomington, it's Your Money with David Hayes
on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Welcome back to Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks so much for joining us. We have Doug Hughes with us in the studio. Let's do a little news of the week. This week brought to you by, let's see, Dave. Sorry about that, Dave. Dave wants to discuss your real estate needs. Give Indiana Dave Real Estate a call, but he's easy to Google and easy to Yelp. Indiana Dave Real Estate. Also, Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. Reclaim the clutter areas of your home with help from Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage on 17th Street, newly remodeled. 24-hour on-site management, offering pickup as well. Online at bloomingtonaffordablestorage.com. I need to go get my car out of the storage, so I promise to do that very, very soon. Hey, what's important to people? Well, you know, retirement plans could be. A survey from Transamerica Center of Retirement Studies says that 54% of Americans said they would switch a job for a better retirement plan. I thought that was pretty interesting. After adjusting for numerical data, no progress has been made on wages. If you look at the impact of inflation, the median household income today is $56,516. It's lower than the median household income in 1999, which was $57,909. You know, the federal tax code, we're hoping it'll get some simplification soon, but did you know that it has 10 million words in it? The publication would take an individual that can read 300 words a minute 23 days of nonstop reading to actually go through it and then probably still not understand it. This is something we didn't know about, but now we worry about. Back in 2008, of course, AIG held most of the derivatives out there, and that's what caused the financial crisis when everyone came calling for their money. But still, just four banks in the U.S. hold 89% of all their derivatives nationwide as of the end of 2016. Thought that was kind of interesting as well. And also, you wouldn't think this, but from Investment News, after an eight-year bull market, the massive first quarter stock market rally, investors would be pouring more money into stock funds, right? That's what they do when prices go up. But no, it's actually been bond funds. This is very interesting to me. According to Morningstar, investors actually yanked out $5.2 billion from U.S. stock mutual funds in March, according to Morningstar, while pouring $30 billion into taxable bond funds. I'm not sure, Duggar, what that's telling us, but that may be the reason why March was such a flat month.
Yeah, well, I think it's telling you a couple things. I think one is that people are, maybe misinformed or don't realize the impact of interest rates on bond funds. But may at the same time, it may be that people are feeling like, wow, we have some under new management in the White House, mm-hmm. so to speak, and we're hearing different things about longer duration or longer extended maturities on bonds. And, you know, maybe there's people that are hearing some different tag words than they were hearing just a few years ago about bonds. But normally you would think it would be the opposite direction, but people are beginning to rotate into bonds out of stocks.
It could be demographics as well. Older people retiring, trying to put some money safely aside. But once again, as Doug mentioned, when you buy a bond fund, it does not have a maturity date. It's perpetual in nature. So if long-term rates go up, your bond values are likely to go down. Now, you'll have the interest to fill that in somewhat and mitigate some of those losses. But I think if you really dug deep, you might see that most people are buying shorter-term bonds because think about that, even bond funds, that if you have a bond that matures in 3, 4, 5 years, rates jump up a bunch, not that big of a deal. You'll roll towards maturity pretty quickly and get your money back. But if you have a bond fund that has average maturity of 20 years or 30 years and bonds move or interest rates move just a little bit, you'll get sideswiped pretty heavily.
Well, and I think another thing too, that one of the most more highly valued, in other words, it's kind of had a big run in the overall stock market, is the high dividend payers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe people also might be looking at that valuation and saying, you know, if we're, you know, the old idea was if you're going to get 3% on a bond or 3% in a stock, take the stock, hold it 10 years, and hope we've had appreciation. It may be swinging back the other way. People are saying those same stocks.
Right,
maybe
right.
Too highly valued, and if I can go get that 3%. The other thing is that fund managers get interest payments every day. They have cash come in every day. They will be buying these bonds that are going to come in at higher rates. And maybe there's people who are out there saying, let's be active in our management and let's go for it.
And that works. That works as long as money's coming in. Money going out's a bad thing. That's one of the reasons that you have to be cautious about owning bond funds, because remember, the manager is managing to the fund, not to your objective.
Mm-hmm.
So if the money starts to go out, people are redeeming, what he needs to sell are the most highly liquid and sometimes his best stuff. So by the time that exodus is over, a lot of times the bond fund is holding things that are less liquid, maybe lower credit quality. So if you have the money, I mean, this is a caveat. If you have the money to diversify your own bond portfolio, I've always been a fan of doing that, having individual bonds versus a bond fund. But sometimes there's certain bond managers are doing things that owning an individual bond fund, or I'm sorry, an individual bond just simply can't do. Maybe it's floating rate, maybe it's some international stuff, maybe it's just some specialty things that are out there that you can't find off of a bond desk. Doug, I've been part of the Ed Slott Elite IRA Advisor Group, well, since its start, and I'll tell you a funny story. I've been on their advisory council, right,
mm-hmm.
For many years, and they were in one of the meetings said to us, what do we need to do to kind of keep people connected to the group? What do we need to do to keep membership up or retain membership, grow
optimism,
membership?
And
yeah,
excitement, enthusiasm.
I'm like, you know what? All of us have been on this advisory council forever. I mean, since it started. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long it was. Let's call it 6, 7, 8 years. What we need to do is expand the board, and for us to start rotating off. Mm-hmm. And I'll be the first one to do it. I'll be the first one to rotate off. Now, what do you get by being on the advisory board? You get to strut around the membership with your little advisory board tag on, and people think you're something, I guess. I don't really know. You have a little more direct access maybe to Ed and Lauren in the group. And when he's in Indianapolis, he'll text me. We'll go have dinner and things like that. You come in one day early, which they pay for. You have a great dinner with them and then a board meeting the next day. And then you report to the membership, you know, what we're doing and why. So it's pretty cool. But anyway, I was off the board. I'm off. They rotated on two people after I left. One person ended up passing away, unfortunately. And the other person is still there. So what they did, they called me back and said, hey, you know, Michael passed away. Would you like to be his replacement and get back on the board? I'm like, that'd be great, but who else is on the board? It's still the same old people. Yeah. Yeah, that were on there, you know, 6-7 years ago. So yeah. I said, I'll think about it. But anyway, I went ahead and folded, and I'm going to join the advisory board. But IRAhelp.com, fantastic resource for people that are looking for answers to IRAs. And from his mailbag, Doug, there were a couple questions that I thought were interesting enough to bring to the show.
Sure, absolutely. So let's bring him out here. First question, a taxpayer lost his job in March. If he took an early distribution of $30,000 to live on and pay about $12,000 in medical expenses and insurance, will he be able to reduce the $3,000 tax penalty? His AGI will be about $40,000.
So, yeah, there's medical exclusions for penalties. There's first-time home buyer, some educational expenses, but those are inside IRAs, not 401ks. So what this person would have to do is actually transfer the money from his 401k into an IRA, then take the distributions for those purposes. Now, paying insurance premiums, unfortunately, doesn't qualify, but paying for medical costs do. So that's the answer to that question.
Is there, not to deviate here a little bit, but when we talk about medical expenses, what does that mean? Is that just like, it's pretty broad.
Yeah, okay. but for the most part, you know, if you had a surgery, if you were at the doctor and had a bill, maybe a hospital, I'm not real sure if elective things would qualify, but certainly medically necessary things will.
Well, I think the point to anyone out there who has made an adjustment or made a withdrawal and it had medical expenses, they need to hire a tax person to help.
Just call us and ask. We can help you with that. Absolutely. In fact, if I don't know the answer, that's one of the best benefits, I think, of being part of the SLOT group. And you know, other financial advisors are always asking me questions to ask Ed. Yeah. And I'm like, well, once you pay your $5,000 a year or $6,000 membership and just ask him yourself. But right. Anyway, that's fine.
A lot of favors owed out there.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of favors.
Hi, Ed.
Hi, David.
Yeah. I'm planning to make a non-deductible traditional IRA contribution and then do a backdoor Roth conversion this year. Mm-hmm. I have no other IRAs except for an IRA I inherited from my father several years ago. Do I need to include this IRA in the formula to determine my taxation when doing the conversion?
The answer is no, but I'll tell you why, and this is a great question. So you've heard us talk about the backdoor Roth. Who would do that? It's someone that has a high income that wouldn't typically qualify for a Roth contribution. So everyone, regardless of income, can make a non-deductible IRA contribution. Now, once you make that contribution, also regardless of income, you can convert to a Roth no matter what. You can convert whatever you want. Now, the reason this question is important is that if you have traditional IRAs already, let's say you have $100,000. So let's actually do it this way, $90,000 in a traditional IRA. And you have you and your spouse want to put $5,000 each into a non-deductible IRA, then convert it to a Roth. Well, unfortunately, the IRS looks at your IRA once you put that in as part of the big IRA. So you could have 10 different IRAs out there, but the IRS looks at it as one. So if I then convert my $5,000 traditional to a Roth, then only one 20th or so of the conversion would be tax-free. So we've had these situations come up where we've actually rolled money from an IRA back into your company plan, so now you no longer have IRAs, and then do the backdoor Roth, and then 100% of the conversion is tax-free. So that's the backdoor method into a Roth. Hopefully that made some sense without a dry erase board in front of you. Now, the question was, so they were on top of this, that I have an inherited IRA from my dad, I think, that they said. does that count as my own IRA and go into this pro rata calculation? The answer is no, it does not. It's its own standalone identity. So you have, you know, an IRA, you have Roth IRAs, you have SEPs, you have simples, you have 401ks, 403bs, you have inherited IRAs, inherited Roth IRAs. There's so many different titles out there, but it would not count. Just a traditional IRA matters. Duggar, that's confusing stuff, but you know what? I like it because that means we have a job.
And that's exactly
the
right.
More chaos and more questions there are in our industry, the more excited I get because of opportunities out there to help people.
Absolutely. And you know what's really wonderful about it is that there are resources. You can give us a call at our office, Comprehensive Financial Consultants.
Anytime.
You've heard it many times on this radio show, 334-3190.
You've heard a lot that JW Cole and CFCI are unrelated entities, whatever. Don't
forget about Comprehensive Financial Consultants.
Yeah.
Right?
But CFCI.us is our website. We have one person in our office that monitors those as they come in. So if you do email us and do not see a response quickly, it's because it has to go through a couple of hands before it makes its way to my desk. So anyway, hope you enjoyed that segment. When we come back, I'm going to talk about the recent Forbes article that I was quoted in, and not so much telling you that I was quoted in Forbes, but more importantly to tell you kind of from behind the scenes how it is that people get quoted and where do the sources come from. And some of the fallacies or the problems with sources, because Doug could say something that is completely wrong, but it's in the paper. So then I decided I read it and not knowing that it's wrong, would then say it again and source Hughes as my source. Yeah. And by the way, the source Hughes used was in California and that source was in Canada. So you never really know the sources behind the sources. So when we come back, I'll talk to you about the recent Forbes article I was so blessed to be in. I'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, my voice is getting back. I'm so excited. In fact, I kind of like the way this voice sounds. If I could just capture that, it's kind of raspy, sort of radio-ish. I kind of like it. Except when I laugh, I squeak like a 14-year-old going through puberty. So, but that's just the trade-off, I guess. All right, welcome back, everyone. You know, for years, Doug, when we've had people ask, when's the best time to invest? The long-term answer has always been when you have the money. Because otherwise, you're timing the market. And over through the years, we've determined it is impossible, improbable, some would say. I would say impossible to time the market. Now, you may get lucky once. You might get lucky twice. But you will not get lucky 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times. It just won't happen. And people that say they have done it are just basically telling you a lie because they've gone back and cherry-picked the times when they said they would have gone. And that's something you've always said about hypotheticals versus historical.
That's right.
That we have so many people come through our office and say, well, this strategy has been back-tested for the last 30 years, and its worst year would have been 2%, mm-hmm. and the best year would have been 23%. And we're like, yeah, right.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's just, you know, I can use any computer-simulated algorithm.
And said I would have done a certain thing a certain way.
There's a lot of things I could go back and say I'd like to do a different way. But so here's the thing I wanted to talk about briefly. A recent Forbes article came out, and there was a question asked. And we'll have Doug do the question. And they asked several financial professionals around the country what they would say when it came to this question. So, Doug, I thought you would first read that, and then I would talk to people about how these things actually come about, how people get quoted in these national publications.
Sure. So, well, as you mentioned, Dave, there's a lot of people who say, what should I invest in once I make my IRA contribution? But the when is a really big question, and there's a couple of things that lead to that. So here was the question submitted. When should I make my contribution? In years past, I've made my contribution for the previous year right around tax season, meaning I made the maximum contribution for 2015 in April of 2016. However, this year, for the first time, I made my contribution at the beginning of the year, so my 2017 IRA contribution was in my account by February of 2017. Of course, this means my contribution will no longer have longer to appreciate than if I were to make the contribution at the end of 2017. There's also the argument that makes argument that neither of these maneuvers is correct. Instead, I should be contributing the same amount every month, which is dollar cost averaging, in order to max it out by the end of the year. To find out the right answer, David.
Yes.
Experts were asked.
How many experts, Doug?
There were seven financial experts.
There's something about the number seven.
Something about the number
seven. Somewhat biblical as we approach Easter weekend.
As we approach Easter weekend. Okay. David Hayes is the president and founder of Indiana-based Financial Consultants. You are the expert, sir. What is the answer?
Well, let me read what it said. No, I can actually remember. I don't verbatim know what it says in the article, but if you want to Google it, Google Forbes article. I think it was April. What is it, Doug?
April 5th, 2017.
On the best time to put money into an IRA. So yeah. So what I told the Forbes writer, and I think when they first called, they said, "Now won't the answers of everyone be the same?" And I just go, "You know, I doubt it because here's my feeling. If it's the first year, second year, third year that you're making an IRA contribution, you're brand new at this, I would put it all in up front and watch the year unfold." Now, if you've been at this a long time and you have a big IRA, when you get to 3-4 years, then I would say, okay, listen, let's start putting in a monthly, because if you then had some bad months of your small nest egg, maybe you have 10 or 15,000, then you can buy when it's cheaper and help smooth this right out somewhat, and that's the dollar cost averaging. But when you get a big IRA, I don't care how, I mean, let's say it's $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, you can't, $483 a month when the market dipped 10% is not even going to come close to saving the value of your account. You're not going to be able to buy enough shares to mitigate the losses in the account. So at that point, dollar cost averaging really doesn't even matter. So at that point, I definitely would say put the money in up front, because that's just the way you should do it. Doug, but at the end of the day, I mean, who really knows?
Exactly. It's as you said, David, the entry point could be completely wrong, and it's the more expensive way to do it. Now, tell us a little bit about this experience and Forbes contacting you and walk us through that.
So I was in this game some many years ago. You know, I was connected, as people know, friend of the show, a personal friend of ours, Mary Beth Franklin, now the senior contributing editor of Investment News. At that time, she was the contributing editor of Kiplinger Magazine. And the retirement guide she would actually write each and every year. So going back to my Ed Slott connections. So basically, this is a collection of, you know, 600 CPAs, financial advisors, attorneys. Ed's been in the game for a long, long time. He's published the Ed Slott newsletter for years, which has become a source for things that are written in places like the New York Times and USA Today or whatever. So we have speakers that come in. Like Mary Beth came in 10 years ago to speak on Social Security claiming strategies. And I remember our mouths dropping like, what? This is the coolest stuff ever. And of course then, you know, we used it and abused it so much that they took the rules away. So Mary Beth and I were sitting at a table having dinner together. And keep in mind, folks, that at this point, I did not know who she was. I didn't know anything. She was just a nice lady, and her husband was there. And we all sat down to eat the day prior to her actually being the speaker. So we're just talking, you know, and talking about this and that and the other, and what do you do? And she goes, well, I work for Kiplinger. I write on retirement issues. In fact, I'll be speaking tomorrow. I'm like, oh, cool. So we just hit it off, you know, just being nice, being friends. So when Mary Beth was writing for Kiplinger, she would email and say, hey, I have a story I'm going to write about this or that. Do you have any clients that might fit this mold? So we actually had several clients that were featured in Kiplinger Magazine. The most notable is my father in that 2007 article, Late Bloomer's Guide to Retirement Planning, and it was pretty cool. So, you know, Dad was in there, nice article about him. They came here to take pictures in the city, and it's cool. If you want to see that, let me know. I'll send you a copy. I only have maybe, 100 of them or so. but I was quoted in that. So anyway, that was cool. And then Kelly Green, she wrote for the Wall Street Journal. And Kelly, the same thing. She was a friend of the Slott group. So all of these different folks would email Ed's office and say, hey, knowing that he had this pool of advisors around the country, do you have anyone that can speak on this topic? So I used to respond to this, and when you know Kelly, or if you know Mary Beth, and you may not know them as another advisor, well, who are they going to go to the person that they've already trusted what they say, how they're going to put it, how they're going to phrase it, and the reaction from the readers. Well, honestly, this takes a lot of time because typically when they need an article, it's not like, hey, I'm going to write an article on this in a month. It's, hey, by the way, our deadline's Wednesday at 2 o'clock and it's Tuesday at 8 o'clock at night. I mean, right. it's kind of like that. Like, oh, crap. So you got to get busy and get this thing. So, you know, I just kind of quit responding. And then Mary Beth left, went to Investment News, and Kelly Green quit writing on those topics. So I kind of lost the connection. But recently have been reconnected with an advisor group out of all places, Las Vegas, again, tied to the slot group. That's where they're headquartered. And basically just threw my hat in the ring and said, hey, yeah, if you have any opportunities, throw them my way. So recently I've had a few, Forbes being the most notable, and that's how it kind of came about. Now, nice. Just recently, we had another person request an interview for the website Wise Bread, like W-I-S-E, bread, like what you would eat, .com, and I went there, great website, and they interviewed Rod and I on the markets and kind of behavior of investors, and it went really well, so I haven't heard, you know, if it made the cut or not, but when it does, we'll let you know and kind of check it out. In fact, this same group out of Las Vegas tell me that many times they'll have requests for TV interviews. So let's say Channel 6 News out of Indianapolis calls and says, hey, or emails them and says, hey, we're looking for someone in our area who can talk on this or that. So they said, if we have one, we'll feed it your way. There so you anyway, go. I just enjoy go. This stuff, Duggar.
Sure, absolutely.
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
So you may get thrown into this mix. This is the first time you've actually heard how this all works. Right? But well, yeah. So just like Hot Rod got thrown in, don't underestimate the value of our friendship, and then I'll throw you under the bus
That's
as well,
exactly
like
right.
like I did Hot Rod.
And I'm happy to do it.
Hey, real quick, just before I forget. So I don't forget, someone emailed me right before the show and said, hey, can I still make my IRA or my SEP contribution up until April 17th? Because Good Friday is this Friday, they've extended the tax deadline, right, one extra day. So you absolutely can make that contribution. Now, if it's not, you know, if you're bringing in a check and trying to do it snail mail, probably not going to work out very well for you because I think the post office is surely closed Friday as well. But technically, you still can. All right. Hey, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about required minimum distributions, making it easy as 1, 2, 3, and also understanding long-term care costs, the importance of long-term care planning, who needs care. And when they need it, what are your options, and what are things that Medicare pays for, what are things they don't? What are some of the tools available in the financial services industry that are available to help cover the cost of care if you ever need it? All right, folks, we will be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Since I didn't do it justice during News of the Week, I want you to know that buying or selling real estate, you want to give Dave a call. You want to discuss your needs, give Dave a call. Indiana Dave Real Estate, easy to Google, easy to Yelp. His last name is not easy to say, but give Indiana Dave a call. He's a great guy. He's helped me on a few deals, and he's pretty persistent guy. Also, Class 101 here in Bloomington. You know, Carrie, the Stegmullers, whatever Randy, their names are. Randy and Kim. I kind of blended the two together. Sorry about that, guys. They provide expert guidance in college search, admissions, test prep, and the financial aid process that can be a major headache. Do not do it alone. Call Class 101 at 812-320-3702. Or go online to myclass101.com/Bloomington. All right, Duggar, I want to talk about required minimum distributions real quick. So when you get to the age of 70 and a half, you have to start taking distributions from your IRA accounts. You do not take minimum distributions from Roth accounts. Now, you can wait until the April following the year you turn 70 and a half to take the first one. But if you do that, you have to take two in that year because you'll have to take the current years as well, last year's and the current year. You do that if you have a lot of income in the year you turn 70 and a half and you're not going to the next year, so you might want to delay the two. But, you know, when you look it up online, you look at it and you say, okay, I take my year in balance and I divide it by 27.2. Okay, how much is that? Well, I like this because the thing I'm going to talk about, because it breaks it into percentages. So at 70 years old, and I have a really cool one-sheeter, and if you'd like to have it, email us at cfci.com cfci.us, cfci.us, and we will scan it to you, and you'll have it in your hand. It comes from the IRA advisor group that I'm part of with Ed. And it just says how much in percentages, because we can relate to that a little bit better. So at 70 years old, the year-end balance of your retirement accounts, so whatever that statement said on 12/31 that you received in January, you add them all up. So if you have 10 of the IRAs, you add them all up. And then it's 3.65% of that balance is your minimum required distribution. You can take it all from one account. You can take it from two accounts, or you could take a little bit from all accounts. It doesn't really matter. You just have to take that out. So if you're earning, let's say, average of 5% on your account, you're going to continue to see it go up. In fact, at 71, it's 3.78%. At 75, it's 4.37%. So people get kind of, you know, kind of anxious about this, and they think, okay, I'm going to have to start draining my IRA. Well, if it's invested, you know, wisely, you should still continue to see growth in that retirement account, even while taking minimum distributions. In fact, Doug, you don't even get to the point where you're required to pull out 5% or more until 79. So, because at 79, it's only 5.13. But you know, when you get up into your 90s, it gets pretty aggressive. At age 90, you're being forced to pull out almost 9%. At age 100, it's almost 16%. Hmm. And the schedules actually go all the way to 115, which means if you're at 115, the IRS says you must pull out more than half of your account this year and pay the taxes. But if you're 115, who really cares?
I wonder how many times they've actually had that tested.
I don't think they have ever had it tested. I'll guess 100, maybe 102, 106. But, you know, people that old don't have IRAs.
That's right.
The IRAs haven't been around long enough for that. I like your phrase, Doug, that, you know, as you get older, as an investor, you typically try to get a little more conservative, but...
But the government gets more aggressive in what they want to force you to withdraw
and pay taxes on. Long-term care. 70% of people turning age 65 can expect to use some form of long-term care during their lives. The annual cost of Medicare-certified or Medicaid-certified nursing private home facilities is around $95,000 a year. The average cost of having someone come in to help you in your home, almost $20 an hour, which adds up to a bunch, folks. Do the math. Do $20 an hour times 24 hours a day times 365 days. The number's shocking. Also, when you have a home healthcare person on holidays, it's always double. So if it's a Christmas, it's a Thanksgiving. If it's a Good Friday, if it's an Easter, it's double. It's just the way it goes. And some will even think that holidays like Valentine's Day and Mother's Day and Father's Day are holidays, and you could charge double for those as well. It gets pretty darn expensive, Doug, and this is something that I know at our office and here on the show, we've talked more and more about how important is it, Doug, to prepare for long-term care.
You know, David, we have this conversation all the time now with people, and to your point, 70% of the people who are 65 and above are going to use it in some form or another, and I think that's the one thing that sometimes people miss is they just think of only the permanent stay at the nursing home, but there's a lot of different areas this, and you've talked to quite a bit on the radio program about your personal family experience, and there's just so much to learn about, so much to discuss, and so much of it is statistics, and some of it is, you know, this percent of the people or that percent of the people. The reality is you don't want to be, here we go, a statistic. You want to have a personal plan for the security and the security basket in your overall portfolio, and it needs to be discussed today, not later on.
And the ignorance on the situation, and I don't mean that in a bad way, folks. It's just we're all ignorant on this. I remember when my father-in-law needed care, and my wife looked at me and she said, "You mean Medicare is not going to pay for this? His insurance isn't going to pay for it?" I'm like, "No, it's not going to pay for it."
Right.
And she just about died. And, and I'm like, you know, I know she doesn't listen to the show, so she doesn't listen. And we don't talk about this stuff at home. I think she wants me to cut the grass and take the trash out. I think if I do those two things, she'd be happy with me. But here's the thing. A lot of people say, well, I'll just try to get Medicaid eligible. To get Medicaid eligible, you pretty much have to get everything out of your name. Someone else controls it. You can't have much income, certainly not many assets. If you're married, there's, you know, some protected things like a home. You have some little more money, a little more income each month. But here's the thing about Medicaid. Once you're on Medicaid, you're basically a ward of the state, which means that they're going to tell you where to go, where you have to be. And you're not going to have a private room. You're going to be in a nursing home. Medicaid doesn't really pay for assisted living. You know, where I just need help kind of getting around, getting my meals prepared. Maybe I'm a little forgetful, but not quite to the point where I need someone with me all the time. Medicaid's not going to step in on that. That's up to you. What if I want to stay home? Does Medicaid have some home waivers? Yeah, but it's not that big. It's not that much. And we're kind of going through that process right now where, yeah, they may be able to relieve for a few hours a day or something like that. But when you need 24-hour care, someone with you all the time, again, do the math on that. I can tell you it is over. It's over $100,000 a year. In fact, to keep someone in their home and just pay for the care, pay for their food, and this is the reality of it. You pay for the diapers, you pay for the rubber gloves, you pay for the Lysol, you pay the taxes on the house, the insurance on the house, the upkeep on the home. I mean, we're getting ready to get into mowing season, mm-hmm. and we'll be paying someone to cut the grass. It's expensive. So when you add all that up, you know, it's $160,000, and we've got a pretty good deal a year to do this. Now, if you have millions of dollars, I'm talking $2, $3, $4 million saved up, and maybe currently you also have income coming in with Social Security, maybe a pension of $60,000 a year, I can run a spreadsheet to say, okay, when you are 87, because you have to pick an age, and you have this much money, this much income, and this is what the cost is going to be. Keep in mind, folks, that if it's $150,000 today, you know, in 15 years, it's going to be $300,000. I mean, that's just the math on it. Mm-hmm. So then you do an inflation factor on that. Maybe you use a 5 or 6% inflation factor on that because those things tend to go up more quickly than general inflation. And then, Doug, you just say, okay, I have $60,000 a year coming in. I have this now $5 million nest egg, and this is my cost, $300,000 a year, and let's run this out. The average for an Alzheimer's patient is about 7 years. You run it through 7 years of increasing costs, and then see what it looks like. If you look at it and you say, yep, I'm okay with that. I'm willing to take the risk, but I'm not okay with it maybe if I have $1 million because I see my $1 million going to zero in 3 or 4 years.
Absolutely.
Then I say to myself, okay, maybe I want to transfer some of this risk. And what does that mean, Doug, when I say I want to transfer some of this risk to someone else?
Well, you know, when we talk about risk and the transfer of risk, it means that you are moving it into some type of a vehicle that will leverage up your dollars to help cover the cost of these unexpected / anticipated expenses that are going to come that will honestly drain the portfolio. Because don't forget, taxes are on every withdrawal if it's in that IRA. There's a mortgage on your IRA.
There you go, man.
But then you're taking money out to pay for things, and you're being taxed every time you take it. So a use of leverage to help at least a stream to help offset some of these costs is a very powerful vehicle.
And for my tax people out there, yes, some of these costs would be tax deductible to offset some of the taxes. I get it. But here's the thing. When we say transfer risk, we're saying transfer to an insurance company. That's what we're talking about. Now, with traditional long-term care, hard to get, very expensive. People rarely buy it. The only people that buy it who have had a devastating experience of their own in their own family might bone up and spend the $10,000, $12,000 a year for this. Does it cover home health care? Maybe half. Will it cover it for just your niece that wants to come in and take care of you? No, it has to be a certified care provider. Will it cover for assisted living? Yes, probably half. Will it cover for nursing home? Yes, it'll cover all of it. Now, the question is for how long and how much? And that's something where you have to sit down with a financial advisor and figure it out. Because let's say that you do want to buy long-term care, but your math says that, you know what, if I just had an extra $100,000 a year to pay, then I would be fine. You don't have to go in and buy a policy that's the Cadillac that's going to cover everything. Insurance is for the things, in my opinion, that you can't otherwise cover yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So why buy a big policy if you can cover some of it? And that's the thought behind it. Now, if you do buy a long-term care policy, I would suggest you look at an Indiana partnership plan. It's been around a long time. What that tells you is that if you ever use this policy and it ever runs out and you use it all, then you can go on Medicaid and have a total asset protection plan, not an income plan protected plan, but asset protected plan, and go on Medicaid. If you want to buy a policy that may cover you for just a few years, and maybe the total is $300,000 of insurance, and you use it, then you can go on Medicaid and protect $300,000. We call that dollar for dollar protection. The other one, total asset protection. But Doug, we've been doing this now collectively for like 40 some years, mm-hmm. and I can tell you that in our client base, I'm gonna guess, this may be even generous, one in 30, one in 40 people have bought a long-term care policy,
exactly
traditional.
Right. It's because of what they've read in the news. It's because of the reports they've got. But it's also just because people don't realize the value of placing those dollars to take these protections on and transferring that risk.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about two of the most popular products that the financial industry have come out with to help mitigate mm-hmm. this fear, this cost, and the reluctancy to do something about long-term care costs. We'll be right back, folks. That's an exciting teaser. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Doug Hughes is in the studio with me as well. We appreciate you hanging out with us. If you didn't catch the show, you'd like to hear it in its entirety, you can always do that on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. Or you can check us out at WGCLradio.com. Doug, before the break, we talked about long-term care cost, and now we're going to talk about some of the financial products that are out there to pay for this. And one of the more popular ones that have come about is an annuity version. Let's talk about that.
Well, David, these, and it goes back to the old saying that we have quoted so many times, it's not what it is, it's what it does. There are annuity products out there that allow you to, and I'll use an example, deposit $50,000. And that $50,000 is invested in a time-framed contract, and the money is put into sub-accounts, which act kind of like mutual
funds.
And
it's still your money.
And it's still your money. But that $50,000 is leveraged to $150,000 worth of long-term care coverage. Now, there are some rules mm-hmm. and some guidelines to go by, but you've essentially taken this $50,000, invested it, and if it does its thing, it does its thing. However, you've leveraged that money out. You've bought a pool of assets to be able to help pay for that coverage. For money to double like that mm-hmm. and triple would take many, many years. And that's why a lot of people, when they see these type of investments
on a guaranteed basis,
look, they get pretty excited about it because it gives them an opportunity to leverage out and to cover some of those and buy a pool that would take otherwise 15 years
so
to
call,
create.
So call your financial person, ask them about this email so we can tell you more about it. I've seen them leverage where you put 100 in, they'll give you 300,000, maybe even 500,000 based mm-hmm. on your age. So they're out there, pretty cool. One of the other vehicles that are out there that I really like, because folks, you know the math, there's a 1-in-1 chance. They talk about the chances of using long-term care of like 3-in-1. Well, I can tell you there's a 1-in-1 chance something's going to happen to you, which is dying. So this is the product that I like. It's a life insurance policy. You buy a policy, let's say it's for $1 million, $500,000, $200,000, doesn't make any difference. We know we're going to die, right? So someone's going to get this money. But if I need it for long-term care, it's there for that too. Now, the cool thing about the life version is that if I ever need it, if I cannot perform two of my six activities of daily living, or I have a cognitive development like a dementia or Alzheimer's, then I can go on claim. And I do that. I almost say that in an exciting way. It's not exciting. You don't want to go on claim. But I can access that death benefit, in most cases, up to 2% per month. So if I have a $1 million policy, up to $20,000 a month of tax-free dollars coming into the household, and here's the key, to do with whatever I want. Traditional long-term care, the annuity versions, do require you to use skilled care. So you definitely need to consider this. I like it. Now, are you going to pay maybe a little bit more? Maybe, depending on your health, depending on your age. But it's something that you definitely, definitely should consider. If this is something you want to learn more about, give us an email, give us an email, shoot us a call. Let's do the reverse of that. Give us a call or shoot us an email at cfci.us, and we'll certainly tell you more about this. I have a really great piece I can email you talking about these different riders, how they work. So we appreciate you doing that. We think you're leaving a legacy for your surviving spouse, for your kids, for your grandkids, when you do this, when you protect your family from these devastating long-term care costs. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Easter weekend edition. Doug Hughes is with me here in the studio of Your Money with David Hayes. Dugger, it is Easter weekend. Of course, Friday is a Good Friday. and then we have Easter Sunday. I had a chance to run into a kid who was fishing with my son, or was going to go fishing with my son. And I said, hey, well, you have plans for Easter? And he said, yeah, we're going to probably go to my grandma's and eat and hunt some Easter eggs. I go, what, are you going to go to church? He goes, I don't know if we're going to go to church or not. I said, well, that's, you know, a lot of people, even if they don't go to church, tend to go on Christmas and Easter, right? And he kind of looked at me funny. I said, do you even know what Easter is? He said, well, I mean, it's kind of to celebrate spring, maybe. I mean, he had no idea.
No idea.
And I said, well, there's also something called Good Friday. It's coming up soon. Do you know what that is? He said, no. I said, well, let me phrase this a different way. These 2 days, maybe you should think of it as Crucifixion Friday and Resurrection Sunday. He looked at me crazy, and I said, that's when Jesus was crucified, and this was the resurrection. And he looked at me again, and he had never been told this story. And I was absolutely floored, because both of us grew up in a family that went to church, that, you know, read the Bible, that prayed together. And that may be why we all stayed together. I'm not real sure. That's a saying that you've heard before.
Yes.
But I'm encouraging folks on Easter weekend, if you have someone in your neighborhood or whatever, grab them by the hand, pull them with you to church, get them educated on these things, because they need to know it. Folks, that's what we're going to take you out on. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.